My guest at this time is Andrew C. McCarthy. He's a former federal prosecutor and is now a contributing editor at National Review Online. If you want to understand the legal twists and turns of the Mueller investigation and other legal issues related to the 2016 campaign and other politically charged topics, his columns really are required reading. Today, we want to get his thoughts on special counsel Robert Mueller threatening to subpoena President Trump and the leaking of the questions that Mueller reportedly wants to ask the president. And Andy, thanks so much for being with us.
Greg, it's my pleasure.
We've talked about this probe a lot in the past, and you've said in the past that Mueller shouldn't need to talk to Trump. So what does this threat tell you?
That we're not having adult supervision in the Justice Department. Look, if there was a journalist, let's put the president to the side and say that there was a journalist or a lawyer who had, fee information or some kind of a client relationship that was relevant to a criminal investigation, a prosecutor wouldn't be able to just issue a subpoena. A supervisor would intervene and say, you don't get to do that because of the competing interest involved, whether it's free press or attorney-client privilege or what have you. You need to show that there's a serious crime that we're dealing with, and that this information is vital and not available in any other form or from any other source. You'd have to go through those hoops at the Justice Department to get permission to disturb, say, a journalist. With a president, the prosecutor should not be permitted to even ask for an interview, much less coerce the appearance or try to coerce the appearance of the president with a subpoena, unless he can show that there's a serious crime that Trump is implicated in and that Trump has information that can't be accessed through any other source of information, like Nixon with the tapes. If you don't have that kind of a scenario, then you as a prosecutor don't have any business asking to have the president answer some questions because you think it would be interesting. And the Justice Department is supposed to be the body that steps in and makes sure that kind of stuff doesn't happen.
So you mentioned the lack of adult supervision at the Justice Department. Obviously, that's a reference to Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, who is overseeing this probe. You've made it pretty clear why he should not be allowing Mueller to do this. So assuming that he is, why would he?
It's very hard to understand what's going on there, except that I think when Mueller was appointed, Rosenstein, who I think appointed Mueller in a panic when the Trump administration completely botched the firing of James Comey and gave conflicting explanations for why Comey, then the FBI director, was being dismissed. I think Rosenstein was very uncomfortable being in the middle of that. I think it was probably the first time in his career that he had people saying terrible things about him. Up until that point, he had been somebody who was liked by both sides of the aisle, as they say. And when he was placed in that position, which was really unfair of President Trump to put him in, but I think he wilted, and he basically not only appointed Comey, appointed Mueller, notwithstanding that the appointment was not in compliance with Justice Department regulations for appointing a special counsel, because you're supposed to have a basis for a criminal investigation, which they didn't. They assigned Mueller a counterintelligence investigation. But he also, according to published reports, committed to congressional Democrats that Mueller would have carte blanche to take the investigation wherever Mueller decided the facts went. And it's one thing to give a prosecutor that kind of carte blanche when you are cabining his authority with investigating a specified crime. It's quite a different thing to give a prosecutor that kind of authority when you're giving him a counterintelligence investigation, which is just an information gathering exercise. Its goal is not to build a prosecutable case. So if you give somebody, you put a prosecutor in charge of a counterintelligence investigation, there's no reasonable limits to what he might decide he needs information about.
Andy, last question, at least on this aspect of this. Do you think public pressure is playing a role here with Republicans pressing on Rosenstein, not only about this investigation, but other documents that they want to see? Trump, of course, is tweeting against both of these guys, calling the investigation a witch hunt. Mueller, I would assume, is trying to justify the ongoing investigation itself. And Rosenstein, of course, is trying to justify the fact that he authorized this investigation. So are those factors that not necessarily should play into these decisions, but are?
Well, yeah, I think those kinds of factors always do. But let me now say something, Greg, if I could, in Rosenstein's defense. And that is, we have our constitutional theory is that you have a unitary executive. And the reason that the framers did things that way, structured things that way, is twofold. One is because you needed to repose all the power in one official so that you could act quickly and decisively if there were foreign threats. The framers had seen that under the Articles of Confederation, you can't have national security by committee, right? So that made sense. But the other thing that was very important to the framers was accountability. And the idea was you repose all the executive authority in one official, the president, and then he's got nowhere to hide if his subordinates commit misconduct or either abuse their powers, commit crimes, act incompetently, what have you. And I go through all that to stress that there has never been a minute in this investigation, whether we're talking about Mueller's investigation or the congressional investigations, when it was not fully within the power of President Trump to direct the Justice Department to give Congress or give anyone else who was inquiring about it any of the documents that they were asking for. The president has plenary authority to declassify stuff. I'm not suggesting that you don't do that carefully so that you withhold methods and sources of intelligence and important national defense secrets. But in terms of all this information that the House is carping at Rosenstein for withholding, President Trump could order Rosenstein tomorrow or today to turn all that information over. He's the guy who runs the executive branch.
Excellent point. Excellent point. That is an important thing to remember as this fight back and forth between the Congress and the Justice Department continues. So as you've also pointed out, Andy, actually doing the interview with Mueller is a minefield for the president. If, in fact, he's allowed to issue a subpoena, what does the president do then?
Well, I think he asserts executive privilege. And I think the theory of executive privilege here should be this is a prosecutor. He doesn't work for Congress. He's an inferior executive official who has a very narrow license to ask questions and conduct investigation in furtherance of probing a crime. And if you don't have a crime, he doesn't get to ask superior executive officials a bunch of questions just because he thinks it would be interesting. You know, if he doesn't have a crime, I think it's akin to a situation, Greg, where, you know, the general gives the captain a lawful order. The captain has no place and no business questioning the motives of the general if the order is lawful. His job essentially is to shut up and salute. And I think with respect to Mueller, if he doesn't have a crime, now if he has a crime, that's totally different. If he has a crime, no one's above the law. If it's a serious crime, then he can conduct his investigation unless the president dismisses him. But if there is no crime, he's got no business asking the president, what were you thinking here and what were your feelings and what motivated you? That's not, you know, we don't invent crimes by speculating about what somebody's motivations were for their lawful actions. What we do in this country is you have a crime first, then you assign a prosecutor to investigate that crime. We don't assign a prosecutor and tell him to go off and find a crime and, fish as long as he needs to accomplish that.
Andy, of course, we also know that the New York Times published on Monday some of the questions that Mueller supposedly wants to ask Trump. There's a lot of finger pointing going on about who leaked it. Trump has lashed out. The Mueller people now say Trump actually is the one that leaked it and so forth. There's lots of questions in here about Michael Flynn, about James Comey, about the president's interactions with Jeff Sessions and on and on. If in fact these are the questions he wants to ask, what jumps into your mind about what Mr. Mueller might want to get at here?
Well, I think, Greg, that it must be so based on the way the reporting is couched and what people's relatives' incentives are here. I think this obviously is a leak that came out of the Trump camp, not out of Mueller's camp. But I think what you see going through the questions is two things. Number one, he doesn't have a crime at this point. And number two, he's operating on a legally specious theory, to my mind, which is that if the president takes action, which is within his constitutional prerogatives, within his constitutional authority, that somehow those actions can be turned criminal if the prosecutor can show that there was arguably a corrupt motivation behind them. I simply do not think that that is true under obstruction law. I think it's unquestionably true that a president can commit actionable obstruction of justice. We have the Nixon precedent. We have the Clinton precedent. If the president performs an illegal act to subvert an investigation, suborning perjury, bribing witnesses, that sort of thing, yes, the president can be and should be investigated for obstruction of justice. But if a president takes an action that is a lawful constitutional action, he is not amenable to prosecution for that. So if he decides, for example, to fire the FBI director, he's got the power to do that. And it's not a basis for an obstruction case to say, well, he may have had a bad motive to sideline an investigation. And even if we thought in some dry academic sense that there might be an obstruction case on that kind of a novel theory of corrupt intent, if you look at what actually happened here, whether you're thinking about him weighing in on the Flynn case or him firing Comey, there was no obstruction whatsoever. The Russia investigation has never been sidetracked. It continued apace. After Trump weighed in with Comey on the merits of prosecuting Flynn, Comey has testified that the FBI ignored what the president said. And we now know that Mueller picked up the investigation, ran with it, and ultimately prosecuted and convicted Flynn. So there was no obstruction here. And what we're dealing with is a situation where we have a very suspect legal theory and a complete dearth of any factual evidence that anybody was obstructed in any way. So it's a frivolous basis to conduct an investigation under circumstances where it really hurts the country to have the president under the cloud of suspicion.
So many different layers to this, but your analysis is amazing as always. Andy, thank you so much for your time today. We always appreciate you helping us understand it better.
Thanks very much, Greg.
Andy McCarthy, a former federal prosecutor, now contributing editor at National Review Online. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.